everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. University of Florida College of Medicine says that high blood pressure and depression are tied to your gut health. This is published in the American Heart Association's Hypertension Scientific Sessions. I'll get into this and what it means and how we could be contributing to our own heart disease and depression and death simply by not understanding that healthy, clean foods create healthy bacteria and that creates a healthy, strong immune system. We have a lot more to share on health and healing. Also today, I believe we need to hear some good, inspirational, upbeat information. I believe that we're inundated with so much negativity. So to offer just some insights, we're going to play some, well, it depends upon how much time we have. There's two. One is a new video called, Connecting with Your Inner Healer. I believe that, in fact, it's not that I believe, I know that every single person is responsible for their own healing, at least to the degree that they're aware of the capacity for healing, how the brain works, and therefore to engage the brain in healing. But it also works in the opposite direction. It works in diseasing. So if you feel that you can't do something, you won't. If you feel that it's overwhelming, it'll be completely overwhelming you. If you feel that you have no value, you don't. If you feel that you can't do anything right, you won't. So everything that's negative in our lives, we contribute based upon trusting it's true instead of looking at what we can do to change and reverse that. So it's a very insightful but uplifting and positive messages connecting with your inner healer. Time permitting, we'll also play by Simon Sinek, Empathy, about why we should live with empathy, especially understanding its importance in the workplace. But also, I promised today I would give you some insights into what we're doing concerning Wikipedia. And it's very simple. Wikipedia is the most powerful information source on health in the world. Hundreds of millions of people per month visit it, but all of their information on alternative health, no matter what type of question you ask, if it's I want to use ginseng, or I heard that ginkgo biloba is good, or is there an alternative cancer approach, or is my chiropractor going to help me? None of that is positive. It is all, across the board, derogatory, punitive, and filled with vitriol. So people normally, trusting Wikipedia, would not use that. Well, how then did that have an outcome on their health? Nobody's measured that, but it certainly is going to be devastating. So we've been writing a series of articles over the last 2.5 years, over 70. We've written to their board, to Jimmy Wales, to their lawyers, explaining that their entire operation and what they tell the public is not in accordance with their standards. What they didn't expect is that we would breach their security system as far as protecting the identity of their editors, and actually find out who these editors are. But also we discovered through two whistleblowers within Wikipedia, high-level administrators, that there's a board that they communicate, the editors communicate on, that the public doesn't know anything about. So that's where they share their real feelings. And we have all that. Thousands of these statements showing gross bias, terrible animus. And yet Wikipedia says you cannot have bias and write about a living person, we have to immediately drop that person's bio. They haven't done that once that we're aware of. So we've done a lot. Litigation's next up, but starting today, we're going to hit them with a surprise. And I'm going to have you participate if you choose to. And I hope you do, because quite simply, it's time for the citizens of this country who've been misled to stand up and speak back. So that comes today. Also, an open letter to Dr. Anthony Fauci. Now, this letter is by three highly respected physicians, Dr. George Farid from Brawley, California, Dr. Michael Jacobs from Pensacola, Florida, and Dr. Donald Pompan from Salinas, California. These are all board-certified physicians, and they wrote Dr. Fauci at the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease and they tell the truth and they have peer-reviewed scientific literature to back them up, good for these three people, because the probability is they will all be attacked. They could lose their license for speaking the truth. These are not holistic doctors. These are mainstream doctors, like hundreds of others, who see everything about the coronavirus being distorted or inaccurate information. So I'm going to read their letter, at least most of it. And what you might have a question about, they've answered in here. So it's very important you listen to this, and I suggest you have other people listening as well. So we have a power-packed program for you today. And we start with a recent study that found that gut health is linked to high blood pressure and depression after identifying key differences in gut bacteria patterns among individuals with conditions and, let's say, that healthy individuals don't have, but sick people do. It was presented at the American Heart Association's Hypertension Scientific Session, and it found that high blood pressure might take different forms, one that is accompanied by depression, one that is not. And it was all about the gut. Now, it means this. Now, I'm going to break it down into, this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Microbiome. It found that people with hypertension, high blood pressure, and pre-hypertension have less diverse gut microbiome than people without the disease. And on the other hand, a study published in the journal Nature Microbiology found that specific groups of microorganisms can impact mental health. So it comes down to this. With this whole mosaic of diseases that we're faced with today, we don't want to accept that they're all caused, the vast majority, by inflammation. Inflammation, that's cancer. Inflammation is arthritis. Inflammation, that dementia, heart disease, clogging the arteries, liver failure, hepatitis. All these are with inflammation. With coronavirus, they're called cytokine storms. So what causes inflammation? Well, that's what we drink, the air we breathe, our sedentary or active lifestyles, and the quality of the food that goes into our body. What specifically? Well, foods that are denatured, overprocessed, sugared, like soft drinks, caffeinated, like coffee and beverages, meats that are cooked, heterocyclic amines, brown products like pretzels and potato chips and french fries, and let's say donuts, that's a very easy one, and white bread, all of those are going to cause unhealthy bacteria, inflammation, free radical damage, alter your cell, and prematurely age you, putting you in a position to have a weakened immune system. On the other hand, the good news is that clean water, exercise, clean food, locally grown is ideal. A variety of food, the more food, like all your berries and your nuts and seeds and nut butters and vegetables and pulses and legumes and tubers, all of that can find a place in a healthy diet, which in turn produces healthy bacteria and hence a healthier immune system and lowers your risk of hypertension and inflammation in the brain and can cause much better mood. So it's simple. It's not complicated. Another study from Northumbria University in the United Kingdom looked at a randomized trial and finding cognitive cerebral blood flow benefits when you have apples. All right? It's that simple. Why? Because in whole foods, healthy foods, polyphenols exist alongside a wide variety of bioactive phytochemicals. And these are good for you, and these help with your brain. And this was a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled crossover design investigation, and they're looking at the phenolic-rich extract derived from apples and blueberries and found that it benefited cognition and mood. That's good. So, an apple a day keeps the brain healthy. And blueberries, of course, are good for all the body systems. Also, another study from the University of Derby, that's D-E-R-B-Y, and Nottingham, Trent University in the United Kingdom, found that The omega-3 fatty acids can help your brain regulate impulsive reactions to aggressive behavior. Well, now that's something that our entire police force would benefit from. Those who are healthy, it would ensure more health. Those who are not and have an impulse towards aggressive behavior or excess emotional, you know, outbursts that can lead to someone getting hurt or killed, that would help them. And think of all the soldiers coming back who are on psychiatric medication and they're suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, and none of those medications cure anything. They contribute. If you just look at the ingredients and the side effects, suicidal ideation and suicide are one of the side effects, and as a result, between 20 to 22 GIs every 24 hours kill themselves. So what about using the omega-3 fatty acids? That would be a way of helping the reactions to impulse physical aggression. So let's break it down and make it, again, very basic. When you take in the omega-3 fatty acids, you're not only having a healthier body, a healthier heart, less likelihood of a stroke or heart attack, but you're having a healthier brain function. So that can cause the lessening of depression, aggressive behavior, callousness, and impulsivity. That's good. And that's for people who might find themselves in that mindset in any case. And from University of Florida, published in the Journal of Physiology, shows that nitrate improves function in the diaphragm, the muscle involved in coughing and breathing, by improving power. And so it could help people breathing and lung clearance in the elderly, which is a big problem, especially those that have smoked. And especially now that we're looking for ways of helping people with COVID. And by the way, COVID can impact all the organs of your body, your brain, your heart, but it's really terrible on your lungs. So this could help prevent that. So you want that, let's say, beet juice, or eating beets and pomegranate, two things that can help there. And University of Manchester says in this study that the public health responses to the pandemic have focused on preventing the spread of the virus, limiting the number of deaths, and easing the burden on healthcare systems. Okay, but young people's mental health is deteriorated the most during the pandemic. That's what the study found. And they looked at 17,452 UK adults who were in this particular study, the UK Household Longitudinal Study. And they found that young people were not prepared, teenagers not prepared to be in quarantine. So, and also part of what allows us to have a sense of health and well-being is the quality of our associations. In fact, one of the five principles for succeeding at anything in life is having a good support system. That means having people in your life who are legitimate, honest, and are there for the right reasons, and not just to use or manipulate you in some way. But they've got your back. So that's important. So if nothing else, we have to have a whole new understanding of parenting, and teaching our children the responsibilities of living outside of bubbles. Because for the last 30 years, a whole lot of kids, two generations, have grown up in bubbles. And the internet bubble of communicating, and which is terrible for most kids, and the lack of authentic parenting bubble, especially among the upper middle class, the professional group. That everything is important as far as gaining success, working hard, but no little or no time for interpersonal reactions, leaving that to someone you can hire. That's not good parenting, and there's a result. From Kung Hee University in South Korea, cinnamon helps alleviate amyloid beta pathogenesis. This is a big deal because the abnormal amyloid beta accumulation is the most significant feature of Alzheimer's disease. So anything that could help break that cycle would be good, and that's cinnamon. How about that? Something that simple, cinnamon. And Massachusetts General Hospital published an article in the American Journal of Psychiatry saying that a set of modifiable factors from a field of over 100 that could represent valuable targets for preventing depression in adults is good social connection. Once again, falling back to that, reduce sedentary activities, reduce TV watching time, reduce computer time, reduce aloneness, and that can make a huge difference. Having the right people in your life can help you. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break. We're 16 minutes into our program. And when we come back, I'm going to offer up some challenges to the way that we're currently, how we're preoccupied with identity politics to the exclusion of everything else that could make a difference in our lives. We're not looking at class differences at all. We're not looking at the people who benefit from all of our crisis. We're not looking at the people who make a lot of money and no one ever asks them, did anyone have to suffer? Did the planet have to suffer for you to make that money? We never ask those questions. Why not? Isn't how a person makes their money, how they use it, isn't that important? Sure is. So if you get everyone hating each other, fearing each other, demeaning each other, shaming each other, erasing and canceling each other, what do you get at the end of this? You have a new cultural, ethnic civil war. Divisiveness, and you're not dealing with a few people. You're not dealing with the South versus the North and the rest of the country. You're dealing with people in every city, every community, every place in the United States. That is not constructive. It is extremely destructive. So I'm going to challenge some of that when we come back. Please stay with us.
And finally, new rule, be careful what you apologize for. Last week, Ryan Reynolds and Blake Lively apologized for having their wedding 8 years ago at a plantation in South Carolina. And while I'm sure we could all do better in being aware of the presence of racism, including in the past, if this is the new rule, it's going to be hard to go to a lot of places in the South. It was kind of one big plantation. And not just the South. The Stock Exchange is two blocks from New York's first slave market. And in 1991, construction on a new building in Lower Manhattan unearthed a massive slave burial ground from the 17th century. Among the businesses that stand over that ground today are a dance studio and a ballet academy. So people are literally dancing on those graves. Because America is poltergeist. We're all 6 degrees from genocidal assholes. If we start turning history into a big game of guilt by association, it never ends. Are we really going to make everyone apologize for standing somewhere that humans used to stand when they were even more barbaric than they are now? Ryan Reynolds said of his wedding, "It's something we'll always be deeply unreservedly sorry for. And it was a giant mistake." Yeah, the Green Lantern was a giant mistake. This was you got married at a beautiful venue you saw on Pinterest. Look, every wedding, every funeral, every slip and slide on this blood-soaked land is inappropriate. The country itself is named after a slave trader named Amerigo. But we can't just pack up our government and pretend none of this country ever happened. Here's a crazy idea. Let's live in the present and make the future better. Of course, tear down statues of Confederate traitors. But in San Francisco, protesters tore down one of Grant because Grant was once gifted a slave who he then freed. Okay, not a perfect score, but Grant was the guy who kicked the asses of the other statues you've been tearing down. You know, while they were alive and could fight back. A little braver, I'd say. There's even a drive to remove a statue of Lincoln at the University of Wisconsin because, as one student put it, I just think he did, you know, some good things, But the bad things he's done definitely outweighs them. Yeah, I wish I had been raised with the kind of self-esteem parents give their kids these days, where you can think that when it comes to accomplishments and racial justice, you're just a little bit better than Abraham Lincoln. Washington and Jefferson are also up for cancellation because they owned slaves. And being a product of your time, that's not an excuse anymore. But if that's the case, if being a product of your time is no longer an excuse, what do you have to say about this guy? And his dad, he was really strict. And neither one of them had any problem whatsoever with slavery. The Confederacy used the Bible to justify their cause because it has plenty of passages from both Testaments to back them up. Slaves, obey your earthly masters. Slaves, be obedient to your human masters. Slaves, submit yourself to your masters. You see a pattern? If we're going to be consistent, I think we're going to have to cancel God. Jesus himself says at one point in the Bible, the servant who knows the master's will and does not do what the master wants will be beaten with many blows. Thanks, Son of God. Would you let those words slide if it was somebody's tweet today? Jesus did heal a slave once, but not to free him, to get him back working. Because this is how slavery was back then. They didn't see it as a problem because no one did. And if you had been back there, you wouldn't have either. You're not better than Jesus.
Okay, let's put this in proper perspective today. A number of individuals, not a large number, but a very vocal number, who have managed to insinuate themselves into university campuses where they have virtually taken control of what is acceptable and unacceptable, what is a microaggression, what is allowable speech, not allowable, and not allowing anyone that they disagree with, even though they may not know the person or even understand what they're saying, then allow them to speak. This is now commonplace. So let's just say that we take them, that what they're suggesting, that anyone who's ever owned a slave or anyone who's had anything to do with slavery must be condemned and are hence forevermore racist. All right, then now you have every religion. Do you remember about 6-7 years ago, I debated on this program the chairman of the Department of Religious Studies from University of North Carolina, very nice guy. And I had my research. I had over 180 statements out of the Bible, out of the Old Testament alone, plus out of the Quran. Out of all the major religious texts, I had all of these statements that taken by themselves would seem reprehensibly vile, that any religion or anybody would take that as what it should be. On the other hand, I had all the positive statements. Now, I'd already had this debate with a close friend of mine, Dr. Ibrahim Malik, who was the head of almost all the Islamic, he was the top imam in this whole part of the United States. And for 40 years, Ibrahim and I have been very close friends. I mean, very close. We spend time together, have dinner, comes down, you know, to Texas. And he's a very smart man. Aside from the fact he got a PhD from Harvard, he's brilliant. And I said, how do you reconcile statements of hatred, slavery, rape, barbarity, anti-homosexuality in the Bible, in these, or in the Quran, or any other, that would allow someone to be inhumane? And he said, yes, those statements exist. But he said, put it in context. These were all written by men. That's in itself a flaw. You have to look for any other religious text, in his opinion, to be there to motivate you to a higher state of consciousness, but not to use those that are at the lower end. I said, well, why not just take every religious book and only keep the positive and get rid of the negative? Do a new edition of every, well, good luck trying that, since the people who control all religions also are capable of using any of those sermons to inspire hatred or fear or loathing of the other. That's how you end up with genocide. Mind you, Mein Kampf was written by a functional illiterate, Adolf Hitler, and nobody would have taken it seriously based upon what he was saying, but he based it upon everyone coming out of the First World War and the Treaty of Versailles and how it went against Great Britain. You would have to take a wheelbarrow full of Deutschmarks to buy a loaf of bread. So people were suffering and they needed someone to blame it on. So he said, blame it on the Jews. And here's why, my story. And then he tells the story. Well, you think, okay, well, that's just a lunatic. Who's going to believe him? Well, how about by 1945, you had at least 7 million Jews who had been killed in concentration camps spread all over Eastern Europe. A lot of Germans were of that mindset that I'm a good German. Well, did you know that this was happening? Did you do anything to try to stop it from happening? And only a tiny, tiny infinitesimal handful did challenge it. So 50 million people went along with something. Well, today we have a book that, in my personal opinion, is the most dangerous book written since Mein Kampf. And that is White Fragility, because it clearly, unequivocally states that if you are born Caucasian, you are born racist, and there's nothing you can do except try never to act white. Do all you can to sublimate yourself to being a unworthy person. And a whole group of people are doing that right now. Well, what happens when you cast upon someone the shame of their ethnicity? Is that not classical racism? What do you think is going to happen when people who have never owned a slave, never been a slave, and they had parents or grandparents or great-great-grandparents way back, died in the Civil War, or relatives who died in the Revolutionary War or other wars or other battles, protecting a person's right to be free, including specifically slaves? So a person that helped end slavery, Abraham Lincoln, and the person who caused it, otherwise it would not have gone well. Had it not been for Gettysburg, the war could have turned in Lee's favor. But Grant caused slavery to end. Lincoln then provided the Emancipation Proclamation and was killed for it. So you're calling them racist? You see, it's so foolish. So let me give you another example. Let's just say that since all these religions, and I mean all these religions, have something in their background where slaves were kept. And I have a whole list. You want a list of how many hundreds of millions of people from Islam and all the other religions had slaves? I have the list. I'm a scholar. I do this. I don't play games with the facts. But I wait and hope that people use common sense and reason and the decency of looking at the past for the best and worst that it's been and saying, I'm glad I'm not there now because we're more enlightened today. We have the capacity to forgive, and as Bill Maher said, start our life today looking forward at how we can be better people and not engage in bigotry or misogyny or any form of identity politics by casting another person as being less than that we are. And yet, that is happening, not by the average person. The vast majority of Americans see this and think, my goodness, have people lost their minds? So let's just say today, you start saying, we're going to burn down your church. We're going to burn down all statues of religious figures, whether we understand the history or not, and they don't. We're going to tear down your mosque. How do you think that's going to go? So let's just see one of these radical groups get out there, 19-year-olds who think they know everything. Well, Lincoln did more. What exactly do you know? I have 141 things that Lincoln did that shows that he was an extraordinary president and a human being. Can you name me three of those? You can't, because you're a functional illiterate. But then again, don't allow the adults in the room. Don't allow anyone who's engaged in any of the civil rights movement or the women's rights movement or any other movement, don't allow them into your talking points discussions because you're being controlled by the George Soros's and the other people because there's a benefit larger than your demonstration and they're letting you be the foot soldiers that go in there as happened in war after war without even understanding the cause of that war. You're only motivated by talking points. So what are you going to do now? Let me give you one example. Just one example. Some Native American tribes held war captives as slaves prior to and during European colonization. Some Native Americans were captured and sold by others into slavery to Europeans, while others were captured and sold by Europeans themselves. In the late 18th and 19th century, a small number of tribes adopted the practice of holding slaves as chattel property, holding increasing numbers of African American slaves. Now, members of the Five Nation, the Native American nations, the Cherokees, the Chickasaw, the Choctaw, the Creek, and the Seminole nations, they were known as the Five Tribes, owned black slaves, then located outside the territorial boundaries of the United States in a region known as Indian Territory. By the way, that's modern-day Oklahoma. These sovereign nations were not affected by proclamations or constitutional amendments. Instead, separate treaties had to be made between the U.S. and these Native American nations, not only to free enslaved people, but also to formally end the American Civil War, battles and antagonism among American and Native American troops. In 1860, about 30 years after the removal to Indian Territory from their respective homes in the Southeast, Cherokee Nation citizens owned 2,511 slaves. All right, that was 15% of their total population. The Choctaw citizens owned 2,349 slaves. That's 14% of the population. The Creek citizens owned 1,532 slaves. That was 10% of their population. The Chickasaw citizens owned 975 slaves, which amounted to 18% of their total population, a proportion equivalent to that of white slave owners in Tennessee. Now, as they raided other tribes to capture slaves for sales to Europeans, they fell into destructive wars among themselves and against Europeans. And whereas many Europeans came to look upon slaves of African descent as being racially inferior, Native Americans took slaves from other Native American groups. However, while the same racial ideology for their slavery did not exist, Native slaves from different tribes could be locked down and have no rights whatsoever because they were considered ethnically inferior. Once again, when you attack an ethnicity, D'Angelo should be held accountable for crimes against humanity, for what she has brought, far worse than the coronavirus, if it takes hold and they start mandatorily teaching her book in schools and helicopter, bulldozer, stupid-ass parents, generally doctors, lawyers, professional class. You never see them do anything conscientious or with bravery. I just wrote an article this morning. I'll share that with you tomorrow about the cowardliness of the professional class. Make the money, get the power, get the second house in the Hamptons, have your own private stock, but by God, don't ever show up at a march for anything because you can't benefit from it. Make sure your kids are functional illiterate, but obedient and as spoiled as you are, worthless assholes. Anyhow, it is unclear if some Native American slaveholders sympathize with African American slaves along racial lines. Missionaries reported that Native American slave owners were brutal masters, even though accounts of Indian free, what are called free men, gave different accounts of how they were treated. And some indigenous nations, such as the Chickasaw and the Choctaws, began to embrace the concept that African bodies were property. They owned them and equated blackness to hereditary inferiority. In some cases, Native American slaves were allowed to live on the fringes of Native American society until they were slowly integrated into the tribe. And the treatment and function of slaves was terrible. Native American groups often enslaved war captives, whom they primarily used for small-scale labor. And during times of famine, some Native Americans would have also temporarily sold their children to obtain food. Captives could be enslaved for life, killed, or adopted. In some cases, captives were only adopted after a period of slavery. Several tribes held captives as hostages for payment. Various tribes also practiced debt slavery or imposed slavery on tribal members who had committed crimes. Full tribal status would be restored as the enslaved worker off their obligations to the tribal society. The Haida and the Tinknecht, who lived along Alaska's southeast coast, were traditionally known as fierce warriors and slave traders, raiding as far as south as California. And slavery was hereditary after slaves were taken as prisoners of war. Children of slaves were fated to be slaves themselves. Just give you one example. Before 1700, the West Toast, that's W-E-S-T-O-S, in Carolina dominated much of Native American slave trade, enslaving natives of southern tribes indiscriminately. And the West Coast gained power rapidly, but the British and the plantation owners began to fear them as they were well armed with a lot of rifle power. So as a result, the West Coast tribal groups was completely eliminated culturally, and a single Choctaw raid, in 1706 on the Choctaw tribe yielded 300 Native American captives for the English. I'm just giving you a brief overview. So understand, if you're going to say that anyone who engaged in slavery is therefore guilty of racism, and all their monuments, all that they stand for, their literature, their books. By the way, there was a book burning just 3 weeks ago in Portland. They burned Bibles. My God, what have we come to? If you don't want to read the Bible, don't. If you don't want to be a person of faith, don't. But then you go and you say, see what we're doing to you, and you start burning other people's Bibles? Or what would happen if those weren't the Bibles, but the Torah or the Quran that they were burning? Do you think the media, complicit as is now in this identity politics, would have just said nothing? Do you think religious leaders would have said nothing? Do you think parishioners would have said nothing? You'd have riots everywhere. But it's selective by design. So just imagine what we're really dealing with here. You're going to then say that all Native Americans, because I can go back through, I can spend hours talking about tribes, dates, captives. Yeah. What you think is a perfect and idyllic sense of heritage of a tribe may not be. The reality is we can't do anything to change what has happened hundreds of years ago. We can change how we want to live going forward. We have to have the compassion to forgive our mistakes and hope that we are wiser, kinder, more gentle human beings who believe in the sanctity of all life and look at people for the quality of their character and what they do to show that they are deserving of our respect and love, until they say, no, I don't want your love and respect. Okay, that's on them, not us. And by the way, since when did we forget that there has been major progress? I don't hear the idea that there are wealthy black people in the United States. You have over 2 million black-owned businesses. You have more than 107,000 employees. In just some of those, some firms employ more than 920,000 people with a payroll of more than $23.9 billion. And then you have another 1.9 billion businesses, black businesses, that don't have paid employees, but they own their own business, like a consultant. So are you saying that these nearly 4 million black businesses that are succeeding, that have a sense of meritocracy, that have worked hard and are diligent, ethical, and honest, that are supporters, the bedrock of a community, that have maintained the sense of family values, that this doesn't exist? It does exist. Why don't you ever focus upon those people, a minorities? Every minority, Vietnamese Americans who came here with nothing after the Vietnam War, who were refugees and today have a restaurant or a boutique or a barbershop or a Silicon Valley firm. Why don't you ever show them as an example? You have 4.4 million Latino-owned businesses, more than African Americans. Why don't we focus upon how did you get 4.4 million Latinos owning businesses, and why do they own business, and how they've been successful, and what goes on within the cultural dynamic, which we never talk about, that makes people unique, which is the guiding force, not ethnicity. They're both minorities. Why can't we show the best of both? Those that are succeeding, we only show that which is failing. Why don't we talk about the American African-American billionaires? And how they made their money, and how they've spent their money, and how they've helped people within their communities. We have 11.8 million millionaires in the United States. Do you have any idea how many are Latino or African American? Hardworking people, nobody gave them that money. These are not inheritances, they work for it. Why don't you show that? The Federal Reserve's survey and the Pew Research Center report, there are around 120 million households in the United States, and 14 million of those are black households. So, and a lot of those are in the higher income level. Why don't we show that? You see, if you're going to show only half of an equation, those that are poor, those that have been disenfranchised, those because of gentrification in neighborhoods have been thrown aside, that's a legitimate grievance and a legitimate concern that we should be addressing by bringing back good employment, by reindustrializing those areas, by going in block by block and taking down the whole block and rebuilding it for the needs of the community, from assisted living center and fixed income housing and clinics, even food banks and gardens and children's daycare services, so working parents have a place that's trustworthy and decent and safe to put their children. We could do that. Then why don't we? So I'm concerned that we're not showing the full story. I'm concerned about what happens when you don't have an education and where that puts you as far as being able to advance yourself in life. I'm concerned that we're now making terrible decisions about Asian Americans. Do you realize that the chance of becoming a millionaire with a bachelor's degree by race, Asians are number right out there, 16%, the blacks are 3%, Hispanics 4%? Why? Why? Why can't we learn from other cultures? And isn't it important to learn from other cultures, the best of other cultures, or what we choose not to want to learn from other cultures, but at least look at them honestly and objectively? So you see, we've made progress. And if you doubt how much progress we've made, and all the people who made sacrifices, and all the people who got beaten down and water hosed and dog sicked on them and went to jail for nothing, well, look at the civil rights movement. It really began during the Reconstruction period, after slavery was abolished following the Civil War. Blacks took on leadership positions, held public office, and were able to introduce legislation changes for equality and right to vote like never before. And that was a good thing. In 1680, the 14th Constitutional Amendment gave blacks equal protection under the law. In 1870, the 15th Amendment gave blacks the right to vote. In the South, during Reconstruction, a setback with Jim Crow was segregation of public facilities. The interracial marriages were illegal, and most blacks couldn't vote because they were unable to pass the voter literacy tests that were introduced. But in 1941, FDR's Executive Order 8802 opened defense and government jobs to all Americans, regardless of race. Good for him. And in 1948, Truman Executive Order 9981 ended discrimination in the military. And both the FDR and Truman's Act set the stage for a larger civil rights movement. In 1954, the Supreme Court made school segregation illegal, and in case of Brown versus Board of Education. In 1957, Eisenhower signed the Civil Rights Act of 1957, the first major civil rights legislation since Reconstruction that would federally prosecute anyone who tried to prevent an American from voting. In 1964, Lyndon Johnson's Civil Rights Act of 1964, which was started by Kennedy, guaranteed employment for all, reduced the use of voter literacy tests, and assured public facilities were integrated. In 1965, Johnson's Voting Rights Act banned all voter illiteracy tests. In 1968, Johnson's Fair Housing Act, just days after Martin Luther King's assassination, prevented housing discrimination based upon race, sex, or religion. In 1972, a real hero. Why don't we hear about Shirley Chisholm? C-H-I-S-H-O-L-M. I consider one of the greatest Americans. She becomes the first black major candidate to run for president and the first woman to run for Democratic nomination. Why didn't we hear her name mentioned and her record and her history? We should. In 1969, Chisholm founded the Democratic Select Committee, made up of African Americans that later became the Congressional Black Caucus. In 1972, Nixon refused to meet with the caucus, so they boycotted his state of union address. In 1972, the caucus released the Black Declaration of Independence and the Black Bill of Rights. also known as the Black Agenda, dealing with jobs and foreign policy and education and public housing and minority enterprises and prison reform and black repression in government and voting rights. In 1976, Professor Carter Woodson founds Black History Month. In 1977, Jimmy Carter appoints Andrew Young as UN ambassador, the first African-American in that position. In 1977, the Black Caucus founds Trans-Africa, to aid in the diaspora on African continent that was part of the anti-apartheid movement and became the longest-lasting civil disobedience movement in U.S. history. And it led to the 1986 Comprehensive Anti-Apartheid Act. And then in 1978, we had the Pregnancy Discrimination Act, the Prohibit Employment Discrimination Against Women Who Intended on Becoming Pregnant, a sizable number of which were African Americans. And then we had, in 1983, Bluford, the first African American to go into space. And then we had Martin Luther King Day signed into law in 1983, and the civil rights progress started taking a back step during Reagan administration. But in 1983, Alice Walker received the Pulitzer Prize for The Color Purple. In 1984, Vanessa Williams became the first African-American to win Miss America contest. And in 1989, Ron Brown was the first black to chair the Democratic National Committee. In 1989, Colin Powell appointed chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, first black to do that. In 1993, the Family Medical Leave Act, workers had the right to take time off to care for their newborn. Then 1995, the Million Man March, and then 1997, the Million Women March out in Philadelphia. Then Obama becomes president in 2008, becoming the first black and also to get the Nobel Prize. And Michael Steele becomes the first African-American to chair the Republican National Committee. So you see, I'm just giving you some highlights of all the wonderful things that have happened, and they didn't happen because of osmosis. They happened because of people seeing the merits, the meritocracy in social activities that allowed constructive legislation and civil intercourse so that we would relate to each other as decent human beings, which had been going on for a long time, not in all areas, not in all states, not by all people, but the majority of Americans were never racist. And so many people today are not racist. So to start saying we're always and only a racist, systemic nation, and therefore we should be shamed, and if you're white, you're a racist, and you should be shamed, and you completely discarded, threw away as if it never happened, all the sacrifices of Marcus Garvey and all the other people who were part of bringing all people up another level in living. If we could only do what they did and add on to it. But first, you got to be able to understand what they did, understand your history, understand of the sacrifices they made, the punishment they went through for standing up and speaking out. And they did it nonviolently. They did it through conciliation and forgiveness. They did it looking forward to working in peace and harmony. I would hope that we would stop and reflect upon where we're going at this moment with our cancel culture, our microaggressions, and a small group of people controlling this and not even being aware they're being used. I'm Gary Null. Those are my thoughts. Now I have Richard Gale. He's on our phone. Hi, Richard. Nice to have you on today.
Hi, Gary. Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you fine. Richard, I told at the beginning of the program that we're challenging Wikipedia because what we consider is extreme bias and breaking its own rules and allowing a group of anonymous people called skeptics and others to control everything the world knows about health, and they're wrong on every single point, and we've written over 70 articles documenting with good scholarship and details and citations from the peer-reviewed literature that they're wrong on everything, yet the media will not touch any of that. They continue to protect and promote Wikipedia with Google acting as the facilitator. So now we're going to the next step prior to the litigation, which is coming. Tell us what we're doing and how people can be a part of this to liberate those who have been castigated. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of clinicians, from holistic doctors, holistic dentists, holistic veterinarians, people who are engaged in helping people heal. the power of belief, the power of faith, energy work, all the different techniques that are posited in the library of medicine as factual. So now we're taking the next step. Please tell them the next step and how they can be a part of this effort to send a message to Wikipedia that we're not going away and we are continuing in our campaign to walk away from Wikipedia.
Yeah. Okay. So we've made, as probably most of our listeners know, we've made many attempts to deal directly with the Wikipedia Foundation or Wikimedia Foundation without any real success to speak of. Gary and I, we kind of recall how the Center for Media and Democracy had coordinated a nationwide campaign to defund the Koch brothers, funded American Legislative Exchange Council, or, ALEC, which is just kind of a corporate bill mill. And they were highly successful in this. So they reached out. These are all these companies and firms that will pay $25,000 membership annually to be a member of this, but because of so much of the white supremacism and racism that was going on in ALEC, some 114 of the major corporations left at the ALEC membership, and we thought this would be a strategy we could do to reach out to all the alternative health organizations, professional associations, their medical schools, leading figures in the alternative health movement, doctors, the journals, the publications, for them to sign on to a letter petition we would provide or send to all of the main primary benefactors, the big benefactors to the Wikimedia Foundation, to inform them what's going on, because it's very likely that they have no real knowledge of what goes on. And the average person thinks Wikipedia is just excellent resource of information. There's an encyclopedia, and they don't know what goes on in the back corridors of the editorial rooms and stuff. So, unfortunately, Gary and I, well, I was more surprised than Gary was. Gary's had many more years than I have dealing with the alternative medical community, there's been a lot of complacency. I kind of expected people to be jumping on this. It's kind of like a no-brainer in a way. They're not dealing directly with the legal department or with the Wikimedia Foundation directly. They're just signing a petition to request the benefactors just withhold their donations, and here's the reason. And also with the idea that probably perhaps many of these people have at one point in their lives have used alternative medicine, or they certainly have friends who have. So we wanted to be able to now kind of extend that to our listenership for them to be signing on. We did not get quite the number that we would like. We would like to increase it. I kind of would hope. So we're going to be posting this on the PRN site. There's two documents. One is the actual letter petition that would be signed by all those who have signed so far and any additional people. And then there is kind of a fact sheet that was created. They're both PDF files, and that will just kind of, it's a two-page document that just with images and pictures and lays out.
Richard, let me just finish it up because we're running out of time. Here's the deal. We have a Nobel Prize winner, the youngest Nobel Prize winner in history. We have Professor Emeritus. We have some of the biggest names in the world. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., for example, and a lot of others who've signed the petition saying Wikipedia is wrong in what it's saying about alternative and complementary medicine. So stop funding him. It's a very polite letter. We decided to go very polite on this. And then we support it with the documentation, say, you probably didn't know this, but these are actual quotes from Wikipedia, and here's what we have found. And if you go to prn.fm, prn.fm, you too can sign it. Now, I unlike Richard, he wanted a gazillion signatures, and I said, no, 40 signatures is all we need because that's a good representation of the people out there. We're talking about hundreds of millions of patient visits a year into alternative therapy. Chiropractic alone has over, I think, 35 million people getting the therapy. So think of how many people are getting the therapy and benefiting from it. So if you believe that freedom of alternative choice and alternative health care, sign the petition. If you believe that Wikipedia should not be denigrating your alternative health care, sign the petition. If you want to speak out to the people behind Wikipedia, the people really controlling what goes on, and the skeptics, sign the petition. So go to prn.fm, read the letter we're sending, because that's all that we're doing. We're sending them a very positive letter with a support letter showing them all the ways that Wikipedia is not engaged in what we perceive and consider legitimate discussions on these topics. And sign the petition, and then we will send it out. We're sending it out later today. We've been working on this for over 4 months. All right? And everyone in the alternative field has been notified about this. Everyone. And working day and night, every day of the week for months to get this into every alternative and complementary hand. What Richard was referring to is how few of the leaders of the alternative movement responded. And I didn't expect chiropractors to respond. And I wouldn't, you know, I support chiropractic, but I believe that they're amongst the biggest cowards in the world. Be that as it may, that's my own personal view. And I've held that view for a long time, and I helped save chiropractic. Joe Lease and I literally saved the whole profession. But others have been overwhelmingly supportive, including those in energy medicine and complementary and holistic medicine. So now it's time
for veterinarians.
Holistic veterinarians, yes. It's now, and they're one of the best groups because they're the ones who tell you the danger of vaccines on your dog or cat. In any case, go there and sign it if you believe your voice counts. Make your voice count. This is an opportunity. If you've never come to any of the demonstrations or the rallies or the marches that we have led, this is a chance for you to speak out to all those anonymous editors with gross biases over on Wikipedia, to Wikipedia and Jimmy Wells, who called homeopathy lunatic charlatans. For the people who want and could benefit from alternative therapy, it's your chance to speak out. We've done all the homework. We've done all the scholarship. No one else has. And now it's your chance to speak out. Okay? Go to prn.fm, sign the petition after you read it, and then that goes out today to every one of the donors of Wikipedia. All right. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.